Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Let's get to Stephen Doyle. Stephen, good morning to you.
Morning, Ger. Morning,
so there's loads of stuff from last night to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about the Manchester United situation. Paul Pogba was all over the newspapers because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has dropped a hint that he's going to get a new deal, and that the trend is in favour of Pogba staying, and this is going to have a massive impact apparently on their transfer policy for the rest of the year. How do we get to the point where Paul Pogba is going to still be a Man United player next season and everybody's going to be happy about that? What happened?
Yeah, I'm looking like a right fool, am I? Anyway, Jerry, because I did a piece there a couple of weeks ago on OTB Sports saying that maybe Solskjaer needs to take the same approach that Fergie did with Paul Ince back in the mid-90s and ship him off to a big club. But it looks like now that Solskjaer fancies keeping him at the club. And it seems to be, look, it was only a couple of months ago, Jerry, his brother was in the media saying that Pogba still wanted to move away to a club where he was guaranteed Champions League football. Now, we still don't know whether Manchester United are going to be in the Champions League next season, but it would seem that the club that he was being touted as moving to, Real Madrid, just aren't willing to spend that amount of money on a player this summer. And that seems to be why he's perhaps tempted to stay at Old Trafford this season. And I don't know, I feel Solskjaer's approach with Pogba has been a little bit, I don't know, a little bit weak. He seems to be kind of giving him a fairly, I don't know, he just seems to be giving him a bit of an easy ride. Now, I did say I kind of thought that maybe perhaps him coming into the team might disrupt the chemistry that United had built up there since January. They've been playing really well, obviously, since Fernandes has come in. There's a good chemistry in the midfield there and the link with midfield and attack. And I just thought Pogba coming in might disrupt that a little bit, and also his influence in the dressing room, because we know that sometimes he can't be, or he can come across maybe as not totally committed. And if he is making public, or even his brother is going in public and saying he wants to move away from the club, that can't be a good player to have in the dressing room. But it seems to be working. He's back. He's been playing with Fernandes. The two of them are linking up well. And, you know, I'm willing to say I look a bit silly now after kind of suggesting that the two mightn't be a good idea to put Pogba back in the starting team.
Could you look at it cynically, Steve-O, and say that potentially Paul Pogba and his entire team of advisors are well aware of the fact that it is going to be tough to get a big club to splash the cash on him this summer, so actually forcing himself back into a concrete position in the starting team, ensuring that he is always in the limelight, ensuring that he is always playing week in, week out for Manchester United. Could you look at it that way, that perhaps that has become paramount for Paul Pogba at this point, because he knows he's not going to get out of the club for another 12 months?
Yeah, well, like, you know, he does come across as somebody who likes to, I suppose, Paul Pogba will always look after Paul Pogba first, and that's fair enough. Look, you know, we all, you know, not just footballers, but anybody in any walk of life, you want to get the best for yourself in regards to your, you know, I suppose, working conditions and the salary that you can get and all that kind of stuff. So Pogba, in fairness to him, if he can get a better contract, if he can get better money, good luck to him. There is also the option of the extra 12 months that United can trigger at the end of his current contract. So, you know, would he be better off maybe letting that 12 months be triggered and then just see it out until he's a free agent, and then he's going to make a lot more money?
Well, there's talk of a deal. That's the whole point, is that Solskjaer says there's going to be a new deal. And look, maybe that new deal includes we'll sell you next summer if we get X amount, and the buyout isn't ridiculous. And it's at a level that they already know that Real Madrid will pay, or somebody will pay PSG in 12 months' time when maybe there are fans back in stadiums.
Exactly.
Who knows? But the common consensus from this news is that it's the end of the Jack Grealish to Manchester United story. And to be honest, I'm not really sure that I agree with that at all. I think that if you're it's exactly what you would be saying if you were Manchester United, saying, oh, we don't need Grealish now. So when you go to Villa in the summer, you say, well, look, we don't really need him, but we'll take him off your hands. And, you know, there aren't that many buyers who are going to give you 60 million, 70 million, as opposed to the 100 million that Villa might have been looking for before the pandemic. Because actually, it's good forward planning if Pogba is only going to be there for 1 year or 2 years, and Matic is at that stage of his career where he's coming to the end of it, and McTominay, you hope, is going to make it, but you're not sure. You can add Jack Grealish to this squad now, and it's a great time to do it because you're going to be busy next year in the Champions League. You're going to be trying to win the League Cup because you want to get a trophy. You're going to be trying to win the FA Cup because you're trying to get a trophy, and you're absolutely 100% have to be at it every week in the Premier League because Liverpool and Man City are going to be at it.
Do you, if you're a top club, Jared, going for Champions League, you want to win trophies, is Jack Grealish the type of personality you want in your dressing room?
Yes, 100%.
I don't know.
A 24-year-old captain who's put a shambolic team on his back and carried them. So he likes to party a little bit. But
he should have been stripped of that captaincy when he had that crash during the lockdown. He's been charged with that since. He's going to be in court on the 25th of August. Charged with leaving the scene of an accident and driving without due care and attention. So, you know,
this has not been an issue for Manchester United in the past, though. If you're a footballer, okay, they don't care about that.
Like who?
Well, several of their players have had issues with speeding, with drink driving.
Yeah.
In the past, you know, there's a lot of players that could be, Steve. And let's not name names.
Okay, you know, absolutely. Listen, I'm thinking about Alex Ferguson when he's in charge of Manchester United, because that's where Solskjaer has learned his managerial, or where he's cut his managerial teeth, working under the greatest manager of all time, arguably. And I'm thinking, what kind of players were ill-disciplined in that United squad under Ferguson? You know, I suppose people used to talk about Cantona, how he was an awkward character in the dressing room. And
Roy Keane
Ferguson
being bailed out from the cells a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely. But does Solskjaer have that same kind of control? And in fairness to Ferguson, he did clear out a lot of players who were kind of, you know, badly behaved around the early 90s, as we all know, the likes of Norman Whiteside, Paul McGrath, these kind of players who were all moved on. And listen, look, Jack Grealish is a really good player. Okay, there's no doubt. He's a very creative player. You know, looking at his abilities on the field. I did a match a couple of weeks ago, four off the ball, Aston Villa playing against Chelsea. And I was watching Grealish during that game. And I'm kind of thinking, this fella doesn't look to me like a captain of a team or battling against relegation. He just doesn't look 100% committed. He wasn't getting back. He wasn't tracking back. He wasn't trying to help out with defence. It was all very weak, you know, lily-livered looking kind of performance from Jack Grealish. And I just don't think that he's the kind of player that, you know, Manchester United, they want players who are committed week in, week out, who are doing their stuff every single week. You know, I just don't think Jack Grealish is that kind of player. And, yeah, I just think, you know, the whole incident with Dean Smith coming back after the lockdown, he was asked about Grealish and the crash and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he was like, oh, well, he made a mistake. And, you know, Jack feels bad. I feel bad for Jack and this kind of stuff. And I just think he's been mollycoddled at Aston Villa. And I just don't think his character is the kind of character that Manchester United need in their dressing room right now.
So you think it's two things. It's character, but it's also footballing ability. You don't think that he would fit in that team. I've got to say, I think that you can play him in any of those five of the front six positions. He's not an out-and-out striker, but you could literally put him in that team in any one of a constellation of different positions. Transform how your team plays from week to week depending on where you deploy him, and all of a sudden you've got options for you can play him alongside Pogba if you want. You can play him alongside Matic if you were on a rest Pogba. You can play him instead of Martial. You can play him instead of Rashford. You can essentially play him anywhere, and I think he does have that discipline in a team where they have some hope. Bear in mind that Villa have collapsed. Their morale has completely collapsed and they don't even have the fans anymore to feed off. I've seen enough of him over the last two seasons to know. Certainly, like, sticking with the club when they went down and then helping put them on his shoulders. Now, he wasn't alone when he was coming up last season. But I actually think that character would be there, especially when in training there are other people doing even better than you are.
Yeah, look, there totally is that argument. If he's in a better team with better players, that perhaps he will shine better himself. And, you know, there's a number of players you'd see like that in the Premier League. I look at the likes of John Joe Shelby at Newcastle and the talent that he has, and you wonder if he had better players around him, how good could he be as well? But, and listen, I think your argument is totally fair, Ger. You know, he is the type of player that can play in a few positions. I remember him playing for the Irish under-21s, playing on the right-hand side of midfield, playing in the centre of midfield. We've seen with Villa playing, as you say, on the left, in the centre. And look, there totally is an argument for him to be at Manchester United, but is he willing to be a utility player that's going to be, you know, shifted around from position to position? Do United need him that badly? Like, you look at what they have there, the likes of Daniel James, Marcus Rashford, Martial, Mason Greenwood, who looks like one of the best strikers we've seen in a long, long time in England. And is there room for Jack Grealish in that team? And if not, is he willing to sit on the bench kicking his heels, waiting for his chance to come?
So my argument to that would be that everybody gets a little bit of a rest. You just manage the minutes for everybody. So he plays a week, Mason Greenwood is out of the team. The next week, Rashford's out of the team because he's being rested and he gets in those positions. He plays centre mid sometimes because you actually want... it's against a team who you know you're going to have loads of possession and you're going to dominate. So you want somebody who is capable of beating a man and dropping a shoulder and suddenly transforming that game. I actually think that I think now is exactly the right time for Manchester United to double down on that. That's not to say they don't also need a new centre-back. And we saw Solskjaer tapping up Nathan Aki, which seems to be okay these days. Apparently you're allowed to tap people up and say, oh, I'm coming for you, buddy. You keep going. I mean, I don't know when that happened, when those rules changed, but apparently, you know, you're the manager of Manchester United, you get your lips red and it's fine.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because they spent a lot of money on Harry Maguire and Victor Lindelof. They just don't look convincing, do they? You know, every time I watch them play, and both players are liable to make big clangers. And I wonder, is Nathan Aki is he the type of defender Manchester United really need? Like, when I look at that Manchester United team and I'm looking at what kind of centre-half they need, you're thinking of the likes of maybe John Egan, a really tough, strong defender who's quite sturdy and can play a bit of football as well. Maybe the likes of Ben Mee at Burnley as well. Aki's a really good footballer, but I don't know if he's that kind of player that really dominates a box and intimidates opposition players. The likes of Virgil van Dijk. Laporte is another one. Yeah, well, I suppose Laporte maybe along the lines of Aki, but he definitely would maybe sort of dominate his own box a little bit more than the likes of Aki and those kind of players. And yeah, I definitely think that's the area where United need to strengthen up, and as well at left back, because I think we all know at this stage, Luke Shaw, well, he can be good getting forward. As a defender, he's not great, really, is he? He gets cut out of position. And I think he leaves that centre-half on the left-hand side, which is Harry Maguire. Sometimes he leaves him in the lurch when he gets moved out of position.
Is the John Egan link a legitimate thing? Not a legitimate link, but is it a realistic possibility where United to be interested? Because sometimes I feel if we have these conversations, we put on our green goggles a little bit. But it seems, in this case, if United are looking out for an imposing centre-half, he does stand out in terms of the best in that position outside of the top six clubs.
Yeah, definitely. Look, John Egan isn't, you know, the 100% absolutely perfect centre-half. He does, and maybe it's sometimes down to the formation that Sheffield United play with the back three. He does sometimes maybe get caught a little bit out of position. We've seen him sometimes getting too far forward and then having to chase back after attackers and getting caught out that way. But again, as I say, that could be down to the formation that Sheffield United play. If he's in a back flat back four, maybe that could be different. Compare John Egan to Harry Maguire, compare him to Victor Lindelof. I'd argue that he's a better defender than Victor Lindelof. Harry Maguire, I don't know, that the jury will be out on that one. I don't know what you think, Owen. I think he's a better centre-half than Victor Lindelof. Manchester United probably aren't interested in him. Maybe he's not on their radar at all. But another player, actually, I would think of as well, who I was watching closely last night in that game between Sheffield United and Wolves, is Connor Cody. Another fantastic centre-half. He really dominates his area. You very rarely see him getting flustered or caught out of position. Really,
Liverpool
really
fan, isn't he?
He is a Liverpool fan, true and true. I think he's still got a season ticket, actually, Anfield, as far as I know. So perhaps not the kind of player that United want to sign. But look, going back to John Egan, if you compare him to the two centre-halves that United have there, I think he's definitely better than one, if not two.
A quick word on the Villa Man United game. That's the reason we're talking about Jack Grealish tonight. It's his audition for Broadway, even though the game's at Villa Park. But that one kicks off at 8:15 and it's live this evening. You can hear it on the OTB Sports app. Villa are gone, right? Essentially, there is. It would be an absolute miracle. Of the teams who are in the bottom three, I would actually say Bournemouth have a better chance of squeaking out, given that, you know, they have some experience of actually getting out of this scenario over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I just wonder about Bournemouth. They just seem to be, I don't know, I was just looking at the table there actually before we came in. Like, what have Bournemouth got? They don't really have any strikers. Callum Wilson, he's a really good centre forward, but he just hasn't been doing it this season, has he? He hasn't really found, like, he started off this season really well, but he just kind of tailed off. And I think that's where Bournemouth have struggled. They haven't been able to score goals. They got 32 goals, which is, I think it's probably the second or third worst goal rate from all the teams in the bottom half of the table. They're conceding quite a lot as well. And they're just in a bad run of form. Like themselves, Norwich, their form is all defeat in the last five or six games. I've always fancied Watford, Ger. I just thought when Pearson came in, he's the type of manager that the one problem that Watford had was they had a bad back, I wouldn't say a bad back four in players, but they were just set up badly to defend. They had really good attacking players, like Dele Alfeu, Troy Deeney, Andre Gray, Ismail Assar is coming good as well over the last second half of the season. But I've heard as well from, I'm talking to maybe ex-players who have said, not necessarily ex-Watford players, have said that there could be a little bit of trouble in that dressing room. So it's a case of whether Pearson can just keep them together and keep their morale good over the next couple of weeks and the last couple of matches. They won their last game, of course, which was, I think that's going to give them a real boost. I know it was against Norwich City. But I just feel Watford might have just enough to keep them out of there. And as you say, Ger, I think Villa, I think they are gone. I think it's going to be themselves and Bournemouth going down with Norwich. West Ham still need a couple of more points, but I like what I've seen at West Ham the last couple of games. They obviously beat Chelsea last week. They got beaten last night. It was last night, I think they played. We did a match with them, Brian Kerr and myself, against Newcastle, which they drew. And the one thing about West Ham is they are attacking well. I know David Moyes is known for his defensive capabilities as a manager, but they are attacking well. The likes of Mikel Antonio is playing really well. And this guy, Tomáš Souček, I think everybody needs to keep a close eye on this fella. He's a really, really good player, really rangy midfielder. He's 6'4", box-to-box player. He can play well in attack, but he's also a really good defender as well. The story is if they're once West Ham aren't relegated, he will be transferred from Slavia Prague for 15 million quid. I think that's going to be an absolute snip for West Ham. So, yeah, looking at the bottom half there, look, Brighton are probably safe despite that defeat last night against Liverpool. West Ham will offer. I think they're going to keep their heads above water. And unfortunately, I think Bournemouth, and for you, Ger, I think Villa are going to get down.
Feels that way, all right. How impressed or otherwise have you been about Frank Lampard? There's a fair bit of criticism of Lampard, given that the number of defeats that he's had this season is more than previous Chelsea managers, that there's a completely different atmosphere around because he's the owner's favourite son, and so he's going to be given leeway that wasn't given to other managers, and also he's English, so he's getting leeway from the press in a way that none of the rest of the managers ever got any leeway with the amount of money that's been spent there. So are you, which side of the whole Frank Lampard debate are you on at the moment?
I do think he's getting an easy ride from the English media. And, you know, we all know who that is. He's an ex-England international. He's an ex-Chelsea player. He's a Chelsea legend. And that's understandable. But look, when you look at his record, he's doing well. I know he's 6 points behind what Maurizio Sarri had last season, but he does still have him in the top four. I think Chelsea's biggest problem, Ger, they're brilliant going forward. Like, they've got some great attacking talent, but they're just so poor at the back. I was just reading their stats there earlier on this morning. They've conceded 46 goals. That's the worst defence in the top eight and the joint worst in the top 10, along with Burnley. I do think he's under a lot of pressure here, though, because they're on 60 points now. They're a point clear of Leicester in fourth, but just behind them, 5 points behind them, with a game in hand, is Manchester United. So if they beat Villa, as we expect they will, United will be back 2 points behind them. You look at Chelsea's last four fixtures there, Ger, Sheffield United away, Norwich at home, they should win, Liverpool away and Wolves at home. So those three matches, Sheffield away, Liverpool away and Wolves at home, Chelsea can definitely drop points in those games. They've got a poor enough home record as well. Wolves are pretty good away from home. That's the last match of the season, and they don't concede many away from home as well, Wolves. I was looking at their record, 18 goals conceded away from home. That's pretty good. Chelsea need to break them down in that last match probably to win points. So I think Frank Lampard's under pressure. Now, when you listen to what Chelsea supporters are saying, they seem to be pretty happy with, with what Lampard's doing. And I think even if he doesn't get Champions League football, Chelsea supporters will be happy enough to give him another season. So where do we look next? We look at the owner, Roman Abramovich. Like, you only have to ask Maurizio Sarri that's about Roman Abramovich. And, you know, he doesn't accept average. Like, they got to a Europa League final last year and won. They got to the Champions League via that and finishing in the Premier League. So Maurizio Sarri did okay last season, but it wasn't enough for Roman Abramovich, so he brings in Frank Lampard. Now, the thing is, we know about Roman Abramovich is he always wanted his Chelsea team to play attractive, entertaining football. And that is what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
They're bringing in good players as well.
He loves Frank Lampard. That's the most important thing in all this. He absolutely adores Frank Lampard. And Frank Lampard gives him a warm, fuzzy feeling, a way that he hasn't felt about football since Damien Duff was at Chelsea, I would suspect. But, Steve-O, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Thanks, lads.
I think you're wrong about Grealish, by the way. But we'll see.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.